This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. When activists with Black Lives Matter use the phrase hashtag say her name, what they're asking us to do is to acknowledge that Black women and girls are brutalized by state violence, but that we fail to recognize their humanity. In a new and powerful book, author Monique Morris makes the case that Black girls are criminalized, often starting in the classroom. The disrespect and marginalization that Black girls face can impact their entire lives. Monique Morris is the co-founder of the National Black Women's Justice Institute. She's a 2012 Soros Justice Fellow, the former Vice President for Economic Programs, Advocacy and Research at the NAACP, and an advisory board member for Global Girl Media. Her earlier book is called Black Stats, African Americans by the Numbers in the 21st Century. She now joins me to discuss her new book, Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in Schools. Welcome to the show, Monique.
Thank you for having me on.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, since your earlier book is entitled Black Stats, I thought it would be appropriate for us to start with some statistics. Reading your book, it really became clear how disturbing it was, the level to which Black girls are subjected to disproportionate penalties and discipline, etc. Can you give us some numbers to put it into context?
Yes, I can. You know, it's important to note that Black girls have become the fastest growing population to experience exclusionary discipline, the suspensions, the expulsions that we come to understand as the core set of conditions facilitating school pushout. Black girls are the only group of girls that are disproportionately overrepresented in all categories for which data are collected by the U.S. Department of Education on this issue. They're 16% of girls, but they represent 42% of girls being expelled, 45% of girls who are experiencing at least one out-of-school suspension, 42% of girls who are receiving corporal punishment, 31% of girls who are referred to law enforcement, and 34% of girls who are arrested on campus. So we see this consistent way in which Black girls are experiencing contact with school discipline in a way that can remove them from school and impact their learning opportunities.
And so the title of your book, Push Out, is in reference to the idea of dropout, right? People dropping out of school, but you are implying that girls are, rather than dropping out, literally being pushed out of school through these various ways?
Yes, there, you know, has been an advocacy community that's been embracing the term push out for a couple of years, really in direct response to the idea that children just drop out. That, you know, the recognition here is that children don't just wake up and say, I'm not going to school. That there are a set of conditions that actively remove children from school, policies and practices that literally turn people away from school. And for girls, what I wanted to do in Push Out was map what that looks like for Black girls. So we find that there are certainly the experiences with school discipline that turn girls away, but there are also a host of other issues that marginalize their educational experiences and that really do push them out. The high-stakes testing is one. The differential enforcement of the dress code is another. And, you know, and all of these things are impacted by a prevailing consciousness that can facilitate a comfort level with turning certain girls away. And so that's what I want to interrogate in this project and in this work to combat school push out.
And isn't the broader context of girls' lives beyond school also an important factor? You know, isn't the issue of poverty in particular, but also sort of living in racially segregated neighborhoods and lack of social services a big factor?
There is no question about that. I actually begin the book with a discussion. The first chapter is called Struggling to Survive, because we have to anchor this conversation about differential treatment and experiences in schools in the context of the differential experiences, the racialized gender depression that many girls are experiencing in low-income communities, and also the ways in which there is a priming of Black girls for their own victimization. So I spend quite a bit of time in this discussion, and I think it's important for us to understand as we engage in conversations about school pushout, the centrality of trauma and victimization in the lives of girls who are most at risk of school pushout. And that's something that we don't often talk about. When we're talking about this issue, we tend to focus only on the externalizing behaviors, whether she was cursing or using profanity, whether she was responding in a way that was inconsistent with what we believe to be aligned with what good girls do in school, rather than really spending time understanding the various levels of oppression that many girls are experiencing that certainly include living in poverty, but don't end there, that are really about the violence and victimization to which they're exposed, the ways in which they have had their femininity or feminine expressions interrogated by the public in ways that misconstrue them or render them as aggressive or sassy and loud and somehow undesirable. And what that does when you couple that with the, the presence of what I call instruments of surveillance or punitive responses to childhood behavior, and what that produces in the form of school pushout in the lives of Black girls.
And we know when Black boys and the interactions they have with teachers and law enforcement are studied, often the ages of Black boys are overestimated. They're seen as more adult than child. Do the same sorts of factors show up when it comes to girls and how they're seen by teachers, but also by law enforcement? And it's sad that we have to bring up law enforcement here, because law enforcement are sadly much more present in our public schools than we'd like them to be.
Yeah, you know, I have been calling for there to be a greater degree of attributional stereotyping research to begin to help us understand how this issue of age compression impacts the lives of girls. Black girls have historically been perceived as more adult-like than their counterparts of other racial and ethnic groups. And I certainly think that's something that plays out in the consciousness, demonstration of implicit biases among the adults that interact with them. Girls who are living in conditions that require them to take on responsibilities that other children may not have, who are not living, with certain either cultural norms that require them to play a more active role in the caretaking or caregiving in their families, or that come from resourced families that don't require girls to step up in this way in their communities. You know, they may not understand what this means in the lives of children and what this means in terms of their ability to manage all of those components as well as to engage them as learners. But I think what's really important here is, in addition to recognizing that there are various cultural norms and responsibilities, and some of them aligned with the conditions of living in poverty and responses to poverty, that children are children, that these are still girls, right? These are still individuals, and this plays out in school pushout in terms of how we apply, the laws and how we apply practices in a way that facilitate criminalization rather than healing. So, for example, and even with your law enforcement example, some of the most egregious cases involving school discipline have involved 6, 7, 8-year-old girls who have been placed in handcuffs or arrested.
And just warn you that we're showing some disturbing footage of the Spring Valley High student who was assaulted by police. If you find this footage disturbing, please do turn the television off. Also of the Texas incident with a young girl who was brutalized by police. Just wanted to throw that warning out there, Monique. Sorry to interrupt you. Please do continue.
No worries. And those were of older girls where there was a lack of recognition of trauma and, both in terms of in response to the incidents themselves, but even prior to, you can examine the behaviors and the responses to those behaviors and understand them to be an unnecessary use of force. But I was talking about specifically the younger girls who are placed in handcuffs and who have been criminalized for having a tantrum. And even if a tantrum appears to be highly disruptive or is highly disruptive, many of us who have ever been around a 6 and 7-year-old know that they can throw a mean tantrum. But we also know that A response to that tantrum does not warrant criminalization and a placement in handcuffs. And so our over-reliance on discipline, our over-reliance on criminalizing children for behaviors that, that are consistent with the age group of the girls, you know, is something that we need to look at. I talk a bit about how the legacy of slavery, particularly in the lives of Black girls, and segregated opportunity for other girls of color, has socialized this idea or socialized us to believe that punishment and discipline, as opposed to love and opportunity, is an appropriate response to negative student behavior. And that's something that we really have to interrogate more deeply, is really to understand how we come to construct safety and how we've come to associate punitive responses to negative student behavior as a way to correct it, as opposed to really engaging the old way, which is to talk to children about what's going on in their lives and develop structures of accountability and intervention strategies that really can uplift their ability to heal rather than further harming them with abuse or criminalization.
You mentioned that dress codes were often being used as a way to criminalize or to single out Black girls. Dress codes are an interesting issue that on which there's been a lot of debate. Those who support it often say that it's a way to equalize the playing field, that they take the issue of dress out of interactions between students. But you point out in your book that sadly often dress codes have been used as a tool of oppression, specifically against Black girls. How is that?
What has happened with the dress codes, I mean, I see them, I personally do see dress codes as something that can function as a tool of oppression, particularly when it is left up to the subjective decision-making of adults to enforce these policies or enforce these codes. What has happened and what girls themselves have shared with me and share with others engaged in this work is that there's a differential implementation of the dress code. So it might appear to be facially neutral. So the language is you cannot wear these clothes if they, you know, appear to be this way. So no spaghetti straps or shorts must be a certain number of inches above the knee, nothing more. But what happens in real time is that girls' bodies, particularly Black girls' bodies, are policed in a way that renders them vulnerable to school pushout more than their counterparts of other racial and ethnic groups. So, for example, I talk in the book, I share the story that one girl shared with me about arriving to school in short shorts. And it was a very hot day in her community. She came with the shorts, and she thought she was okay because she was there to be in school. Instead of the school saying, "Great, go to class," they stopped her and said, "You can't come to school wearing these shorts." And she watched a girl who was white wearing the exact same shorts be able to go to class. And she said, you know, she protested in the moment to say, "I have on the exact same shorts. Why can she go to class and I can't go to class? You know, why is there this space where this is occurring?" And it ended up, you know, she ended up protesting by going to class, being sent back to the office. And for her, it was really not about the shorts. It was about how the shorts looked on her body. And so she, you know, ended up having this, and she and others in similar situations expressed this way in which they internalize their own bodies as somehow being inferior, or they internalize this idea that their bodies are somehow less acceptable in spaces of learning, or somehow more provocative to the boys in spaces of learning in ways that sexualize them when they don't intend to be sexualized, or they don't intend to engage with that type of mentality. And so, you know, that's one example, you know, certainly of differential implementation, but girls describe this in every city that I have been in when I talk to them about whether they're wearing tank tops, whether they're wearing short shorts, whether they're wearing a hat in school, that how they arrive in school should absolutely be seen as secondary to the fact that they have arrived in school to learn. And we continue to operate in many of our schools as if what children are wearing takes precedence, when really we should be having discussions about healthy, intimate partner relationships, and we should not be punishing girls for being, quote unquote, distractions for boys or for other girls in ways that that really undermine their identity as scholars. Hmm. So You know, I think it's certainly, you know, ripe for discussion, ripe for debate. And certainly in that conversation, we should also consider the ways in which it's differentially impacting Black girls.
I also want to talk about another aspect of the work that you write about in your book that was very disturbing, and that's how prevalent the issue of sex trafficking is among Black girls. We don't talk about this very much. When we talk about sex trafficking, it's usually in an international context. But how serious an issue is this? Why are Black girls finding themselves in such horrific situations? And how are our schools failing them on this?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about when I said there's a certain priming of Black girls for their own victimization. And that enters this conversation quite a bit. You know, in many urban centers, the majority of girls who are commercially sex trafficked are actually Black girls. In Los Angeles, more than 90% of the girls who are commercially trafficked are Black girls. In Oakland, we see the same. Chicago, the rates are high. New Orleans, New York. These are urban spaces where we tend to still, global cities where we still tend to talk about trafficking in the context of the global phenomenon without recognizing that we're stepping over girls in our own communities and not acknowledging their risk and vulnerability in this conversation as well. I'm happy to say that conversation is shifting, particularly as we come to understand that there's no such thing as a child prostitute. But historically, Black girls have been situated in this conversation as a community of girls choosing to be in this life as opposed to being trafficked and victimized by commercial sexual exploitation. I'm very happy this language is changing. And I approach it in this book in a way to show us that girls, again, who are most at risk of school pushout are girls who have experienced extreme trauma and victimization, much of it including sexual victimization. So many of the narratives that I include in this book are from girls that have been away from school, been classified as truant, been labeled as defiant, may present as fighters, but there are also girls who have participated in underground economies, who are struggling with commercial sexual exploitation, and whose stories and experiences have not been considered when we engage in responses to their problematic academic performance. So what I talk about is not only the structural ways in which systems don't align to recognize and respond to that commercial sexual exploitation or that increased risk of victimization, but also the ways in which individuals in schools don't see our girls and don't establish the type of student-teacher relationships that can really provide opportunities for healing. So, you know, I share these stories as a way to challenge us to think differently about girls whose behaviors we write off as hypersexual or girls who we write off as being habitually truant, and really saying to ourselves, you know, why are they not showing up? What can we do as a community to show up differently for them? Girls who are obviously in crisis and who need to understand the relationship between their education and their career opportunities later in life. But what's also important is that, you know, we've got work to do in our communities to uplift how we are normalizing behaviors through popular culture, through songs that we teach our children or that we sing as children without really deconstructing what they mean, in ways that really do enforce a consciousness among girls, disproportionately Black girls, about how they're going to navigate through poverty, what they're going to do to succeed, how we're going to engage them. You know, one of the reasons I wrote Push Out was to really uplift the importance of education as a critical protective factor in the lives of girls against contact with the juvenile and criminal legal system.
Right, you point out in your book how significantly improved things like even unemployment statistics are when
exactly.
girls graduate, or even if they can then go to college.
Exactly, and it's important for us to share that information with the girls, right? So it's not even just about what we know, it's about making sure they understand those connections and that they have systems in place, and we have pedagogy that is oriented toward in uplifting these ideas and really making these connections with girls in real time.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Monique, for joining us today and spending this time with us. Best of luck to you with your book.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having this conversation with me.
My guest is Monique Morris. She's the co-founder of the National Black Women's Justice Institute, a 2012 Soros Justice Fellow, former Vice President for Economic Programs, Advocacy and Research at the NAACP, and an advisory board member for Global Girl Media. We've been discussing her new book, Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in Schools. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.